bummer, right? I think we made the right decision on postponing off of July 4th for sure, as I continue to see things happening both around here and nationally. I believe that that having a large, somewhat uncontrollable crowd, you know, at a festival like Saturday in the Park will present risks, because there's just so many people in close proximity that I believe, just like we've just seen in Okoboji just recently, it'll just cause spread. And I think that's something that everyone is mutually aligned and not wanting to see.
Where do things stand now?
So presently, as of the second, which could change at any second, we are just on hold. We have been looking at September, as I indicated previously when we made the announcement that we were going to postpone, that I would say it's at best 50-50 we do something still. What could happen would be we just end up having to cancel or postpone till next year, or secondarily, we could actually pop up with something that's a very downscaled type of event, even a pop-up type of event, or the like. You know, we've explored a lot of different things, and it's just hard to get your arms around it. It's hard to figure out a scenario where, again, at Granby Park, which is so open, where today we would just want to have, you know, people just flowing in from all directions and not be able to control crowd density, realizing that, you know, requiring masks is a non-starter. You have to somehow be able to provide the safeguards that many expect. And that's prudent to make sure that we're doing the right thing, because I don't think any of us want to, you know, cause even one additional person to get sick that wouldn't otherwise. So if that's a fair way to say that.
And when do you think you would make an announcement? I guess everything's just kind of fluid
When we do.
Okay. I'm just trying to pinpoint something down, of course, you know that, Dave.
The key for everyone to remember is it's such uncharted territory that it's impossible to say, like, what benchmarks might pop up that would indicate to us that it made sense or it didn't make sense. You know, one of the bigger issues, too, is that right now a lot of bands are just not touring. One of the headliners we had lined up for Saturday in the Park, we were looking heavily at Labor Day weekend, even though we didn't know if it was even doable. They just came back to us and just said, listen, we're done for the fall. We're not doing anything. And I think the biggest problem right now is is acquisition of talent is very, very difficult. And you can't really have a awesome live music festival without bands. So
who was the band?
I would love to be able to tell you, but nice try. I would have expected to ask me that. Appreciate you not letting me down there. So.
So this obviously was going to be the 30th anniversary, a huge year since
Correct.
You first launched the festival. Do you plan then to do that hopefully next July instead?
You know, right now we're looking at trying to move at least some of the folks we had directly to July 3rd is what it would be. And so hopefully we'll be able to at least roll out with that sooner than later. That seems to be a pretty big trend of folks moving festival lineups just down a year, as painful as that is.
Let's look back over those 30 years. Is there a certain year that was the most memorable to you or a specific artist looking back?
So, you know, there's quite a few, and it's hard for me to even remember that long ago. You know, clearly in some ways the first year was just so special in hindsight because it was just so unknown, and we had no idea what we were doing, more or less. And to watch it unfold, feel it unfold, realize at times that it was utter chaos, but then ultimately that there really was something there that people were responding to, which generally was our experience with live music the first few years that we were doing things anyways, whether it was the Blue Cellar as well, where all of a sudden we did a show and charged $6 cover, which literally I can't remember how many people told me you can never collect a cover in Sioux City at a bar. And I mean, I think we sold out at 450 people for a blues band called the Table Rockers out of Lincoln. That was kind of the house band at the blues bar down there. The first Saturday in the Park was like that times 100. I mean, it was just like unfolding, like all of our throwing party experience and some of my booking band experience in Chicago into like this uncharted zone. So that was a great year. For me, I would say the single best show that we ever had was the Ava Brothers in 14.
When my body won't hold me anymore and it finally lets me free, will I be ready?
I just think that those guys put on a show that totally, completely transcended what everybody's expectations were, if that's the right way to say that. You know, I think people came in with, like, questionable expectations, including, like, a lot of people not knowing them, and they played after Bonnie Raitt. People are talking about people. Which we even got some feedback on, but man, everybody stayed, and that show just, they were just on fire. It was the night and the crowd and the music and the sound. It was amazing. Aretha was, of course, amazing. What you want, baby, I got. B.B. King was absolutely amazing when we had him. I'd been trying to book B.B. King for so long.
The sound that you're listening to is from my guitar that's named Lucille.
And it always conflicted with him going to Europe. So the year that we had to cancel a show with him the prior November, and we were able to flip that into BB playing Saturday in the Park, was just really magical. And I kind of knew at the time that it was probably going to be his last time playing in Sioux City. And so, you know, having that be the way that, you know, we, I guess, had the luck of honoring him, the privilege of honoring him was great as well. You know, there's been so many other ones throughout the time. The early Santana, Fits in the Tantrums, you know, playing early in the bill when they were just like starting to bust out, and you know, being such an amazing band was cool as well. And there's others. Gogo Bordello was another one. We're coming rough on every time. Hey, hey. The utter chaos that I knew would ensue because I'd seen them a couple times prior when they played. Just, you know, there's some really amazing musicians out there that just have done great shows. Foster the People, you know, prior to Aretha. They were great. Just cool stuff. Of course, even Flo Rida last year. Can you blow my whistle, baby? Whistle, baby, let me know. Musically, maybe not. You know, a lot of tracky stuff and produced stuff, which is great. I mean, it's great to listen to. I love listening to it. But live, you know, put on a much better show than I was expecting, especially compared to CeeLo, who was just all track and him singing in front of an iPod, basically. So that was, you know, fun. I mean, it was cool. It just seems like gotten lucky throughout the years.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I really wanted to just focus on positive notes, talking about previous shows.
Oh, yeah.
But when you look back, you were talking a little bit about CeeLo singing to a track. Did you ever book someone that you felt kind of didn't live up to the expectations that you had?
So, you know, sure. I mean, there's been bands that maybe haven't delivered as good of a set or had as good of a draw as maybe we hoped. But then there's also people that have far exceeded even our expectations. It's all about expectations at Saturday in the Park. So bands show up with low expectations. You know, they see Sioux City on their lineup. It's probably a good paying gig, but, you know, they're on their way from Chicago or Milwaukee Summerfest to or from to Colorado to play Red Rocks, right? It's like, Sioux City. So they get here and they're blown away. And we just hear that over and over again. I mean, I could just name so many artists whose expectations were exceeded, but then it's also us as producers, our committee, everybody. And it's also the fans, right? Sometimes people show up and maybe they're not expecting a lot from the Avett Brothers and they're blown away, or they show up and they don't even know Gogo Bordello. And then they're like, what the hell was that? And it's the same with us working on it. You know, people are fired up for one artist and then all of a sudden they see someone middle of the afternoon. I remember when Con Brio played the Abe, and it was kind of almost a favor booking for a big agent that had put someone else on later that year on the main stage. And, you know, the minute Con Brio went on, the guys at the Abe stage were like blowing me up and other people up, like, get up here right now, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, it's 3 in the afternoon, 4 in the afternoon, what's going on up here? You know, a dude channeling James Brown. So, it was, you know, it's that kind of stuff. So there's been people that have been difficult to deal with. There's folks where maybe the show didn't equal quite the craziness of the, producing them. You know, there's just, it's just a weird mix, but when it gels, I mean, thinking back for a second, you bring up CeeLo, and CeeLo was chaos. Like, we didn't know that CeeLo was going to show up until probably a day or two before. Like, I was feeling like he was going to cancel, and there was a lot of pressure because we knew he was huge and he had that huge hit the FU song, and which wasn't great, but it was on the back of Gnarls Barkley, which was a tremendous effort he did, you know, a year or two prior. And also it was on the wake of the floods in 11. And so we knew people were literally just ready to bust out, and we knew it was going to be huge. And it wasn't that expensive of a booking. But luckily I had a buddy who I reached out to in LA, and I said, "Hey, do you know this guy who's his manager?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, I know that guy well." And I was like, "Can you call him and find out if Seal is actually coming? Because we have nothing as far as advance." And my buddy called and said, "Well, he wasn't coming, but he's coming now." And, So that was great. And back to my point, I kind of ragged on the show where he literally had a DJ who was playing a track off a computer or an iPod. The energy, because of the expectation for CeeLo, I have never walked out on that stage and looked at a sea of people like right before he came on, because he was second to last. He came on, it's pretty light out, so you could really see everything. And when I walked out, I mean, right when the stage was cleared, right before he walked out, just looking at the side, there was this weird just electricity in the air. There was just something going on there that, you know, this mass crowd expectation that was like undeniable. And, it just was this weird, like, suspension of time. And then he walked out and the crowd just came unglued, you know, from the stage all the way back to, you know, up over the hill. I mean, it was solid. Like, you know, when that road gets packed, like between the beer garden and the food vendors and the park, you know, when that road's packed, that it's a big crowd. And we saw that for sure for CeeLo. We saw it for BB King. I didn't think anyone was going to show up for the BB King year, because I just didn't hear anybody talking about it. And then that road was packed, you know, and someone told me I was an idiot for thinking nobody was going to show up, which I probably was, but it wasn't the first time.
I just remember that first year was so magical. You were correct about that. It was just something I think people here had never seen before. And just everyone was united, and you don't always see that either.
Yeah, it was, I think, just, you know, just people were like, you know, this park is great. Nothing against the municipal band, because they're awesome. But we need to use it for more. And so I just remember talking to so many people that felt it was, including us, that it was just so much fun. And, we had a after party after that thing. And, I mean, I think we just... Yeah, we took the beer trailer with all the kegs in it and hooked it onto someone's truck and took it to the after party, and just kept going. And it was, you know, it was just awesome. Yeah, I was 25, so yeah, it was a good time to do something like that.
Yeah, it was a great time.
And make a great time. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so many funny people involved and fun people involved, and still pictures from back then. I still remember, like, our big plan back then is we would hide the money in the, like, we had a little cash box, and we'd hide it in Adam's car and take Adam's keys and lock them in my car. And somehow we got all screwed up, and Adam's keys were locked in my car, and my keys were locked in Tom Gruskin's car, and Tom Gruskin's keys were locked in Adam's car. So we had absolutely no access to three cars, any keys or any money that we needed to pay bands at one point during that day. So it was how green we were, right? So just funny stuff. But it was magical. The first year was super, super magical.
If you could book anyone you wanted, money was an obstacle. You didn't have to worry about managers or how tours are set up nowadays. Who would be on your wish list for like the most perfect Saturday in the Park?
Yeah, I mean, somebody that's still alive or just anybody.
Anybody.
Because,
you know, I guess you could do either.
That's tough because, so in my mind, my mind always routes towards the reality, right? Because there's a lot of people that would, you know, like a Bruce Springsteen would be unreal, or a Bruno Mars would be unreal. But they're also unattainable. So many people that play called the Quest Center or whatever it's called now, or venues like that are never going to be able to play Saturday in the Park because of the dollars. So, there's that kind of grouping of folks. There was always the thought that maybe for the 30th, you know, to try and really rally some sponsors, past and present, and see about trying to book a Tom Petty or somebody like that. Of course, you know, that we were thwarted with that type of initiative, or even a Neil Young or somebody, you know, folks like that are amazing. You know, and there's certainly a raft of folks that got away, whether it was Stevie Ray Vaughan, who I'm sure would have played at some point early on, or also, you know, another one was James Brown, despite his sordid past, clearly would have been amazing to have him play. I'm really glad that we were able to have Aretha, of course, but there, you know, I was always really a big fan of, you know, the older R&B, the blues, so many folks that, you know, passed away early, the Albert Collins of the world and people like that, but that were, you know, just amazing, you know, amazing old school artists that really kind of pioneered a lot of what people love so much. You know, you look at Bruno Mars, and, you know, you take that back to James Brown, and we were dancing around the concept of trying to book James Brown. He was having a little bit of a challenge back then because I think he tried to run over his wife or girlfriend at the time with his riding lawnmower. So that sort of presented a scenario that we decided we needed to stay away from, I think, you know, rightfully so at the time. But, you know, in hindsight, just bummed we were never able to book him, you know, bummed he tried to do that as well, supposedly. So, anyway, you know, folks like that, just you look back and think, how amazing would that have been? This is a tough year, right? It's tough. You know, I find myself sitting here looking at, you know, the week before our load in, where we would already be building a stage up there and everything. And it's weird. And, it's weird for everybody. So it's a lot of loss, for all of us that work on the fest. It's a lot of loss for the community in general. I know I talked to one of our production vendors today. It's a lot of loss for those guys. I mean, they've lost a lot of shows. It's just everybody. And, but you know, we gotta just get through it, and we gotta do the right thing, and safety is key. And as much as people want to maybe not believe that it's happening, I mean, we have to just be realistic and responsible. And so that's the crappy part of what we're all going through right now. But, you know, it doesn't mean that we won't be back. And it's not the biggest problem we all have to face. So we'll get through it, and, you know, look forward to having a 30th anniversary, not on July 4th, but at some point between this July 4th and next July 4th, whether that's July 3rd or September or something or other, or who knows. We'll have to see, right?
Yeah, totally. All right. Thanks, Dave.